Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Founders Club Radio.
Welcome to the Founders Club, where each week we talk to the founders and leaders of great private companies. I'm your host, John Coffin, and today we are actually broadcasting from Chattanooga, Tennessee, in the incubator. Today in the studio, we have Tim Pearsant, the CEO and co-founder of Tennessee Stillhouse and Chattanooga Whiskey, and Jay Bell, the owner and of Bell Development Company. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Jay, we're going to start with you. Describe your firm for me and tell me what's going on.
Well, we're a small residential development firm here in Chattanooga. I grew up in it. We buy land and, you know, parcel it up into parcels and build houses on it and sell it to young families and all in between.
Okay. How did you get started in the business?
Well, you know, I grew up on a bulldozer, I tell people. You know, my dad would point me in the right direction and tell me to build a road, and that's what I did pretty much my whole life.
Okay. And so you've been in the business with your father until a little while ago.
My father recently passed away, but mm-hmm. up until that time, we were sort of business partners. You know, I grew up in under his leadership, and like I said, it was a family business that he started in 1976.
Okay. So, wow, you're coming up on 40 years next year.
Yeah, a long time.
That's incredible. Congratulations. We aspire to your longevity.
Well, thank you.
40 years is fantastic.
Yeah, thank you.
I guess there's incredible statistics that the number of companies that survive into the second generation is very, very modest, and so that's really impressive. Jay, when did you know that you wanted to stay in the business?
Well, I've always loved the outdoors, and I've always loved the freedom of what we do, and sort of the entrepreneurial spirit that goes along with it just sort of fit my personality perfectly. And I knew early on that this is what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about the state of the residential market here and, you know, what you're experiencing these days.
Well, you know, we're about 50% back to where we were pre-recession, and we're not going to make any great strides, I don't think, anytime soon, but we're going to have a nice steady climb back to probably a normal market. It may take several more years, mm-hmm. but we're happy about where we are, and we're glad to be still in business, to be quite honest with you. And
yeah.
We think we've got a healthy thing here in Hamilton County in Chattanooga. And obviously, you'll see, speaking with Tim, there's a lot of creative people in our town, a lot of new growth. And so we're excited about the future for home building here.
Where specifically are you focusing your efforts in Hamilton County these days?
Well, we're all around Hamilton County. We build in all of the surrounding areas around Chattanooga. Mm-hmm. We're not downtown in Chattanooga, which is a real happening place, but we mainly focus on the suburbs. We're in East Brainerd. We're in Ooltewah. We're in Soddy Daisy, Hickson, most all the suburbs.
Right. And as far as the range of homes that you're building, give us some perspective on that.
Well, we build basically three products. I build a townhouse product that's oriented towards people who are retirement age. It's a one-level, low-maintenance product that's very nice for them. They like it, and we've had great success with it. We build a starter home that starts at about $225,000 and goes up to about $260,000, mm-hmm. Usually in the rolling hills of Hamilton County. They normally have basements. They're normally split foyer. They're very, very nice. I've got that in about four different subdivisions. And then we build a home for maybe somebody who's stepping up into that sort of second home or third home, a very nice home that's about 2,500 to 2,700 square foot, and those go from about $325,000 up to $400,000.
And are you finding good feedback in the market right now at each of those three levels?
Yeah, we're very fortunate because all of our products are selling well and have been very well received and are in the price ranges that people are still buying.
Mm-hmm. One of the challenges in several markets has been that with the downturn, it was tough to find talent as things are kind of coming back. Have you been experiencing that, or do you have your kind of your guys, so to speak?
Well, we're very fortunate in that most of the subcontractors and most of the people who work for us have worked for us for over 20 years. And so while they downsized a little bit, we kept them busy. And so now that we're coming back, we've got them, and we're able to take advantage of that. So we're not experiencing that, but other people are.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's one of the benefits of longevity in the market, I guess.
It is.
Those long-term relationships. Mm-hmm. you know, you mentioned that you survived, you're thriving now. What are some of the tips that you have for people that you learned through the going through the downturn and all that?
Well, the downturn taught us a lot of things. You know, it taught me that, you know, every deal that comes across my desk, I committed to make it work. And when we realized we were in a recession, and it didn't take long to realize that, my father told me, he said, if a deal comes across your desk, you find a way to make it work. Mm-hmm. And so we did. And so I didn't let one slip by. For about 3 years, I didn't let a deal slip by. If somebody came in to buy a house from me, I found a way to make it work.
Right. Mm-hmm. Has that worked out pretty well from you? Sounds like you've got a lot of committed clients and all that.
Well, we're very fortunate because, you know, we've had a long relationship with our clients and with our neighborhoods. Some neighborhoods we've been in for over 20 years. And so we're not the type of builder that comes into a community and builds a few houses and then moves on to another. Mm-hmm. We are the land developer. We are the developer of the communities. And so we've got a commitment to our homeowners and to the realtors and to the builders that come in and build with us to build a nice product and one that we can be proud of for a long time.
So you mentioned just I think there was something that on your website that talks about. You're over 300 lots a year, you know, kind of as far as the size of your business. But tell us more about the scope and the number of projects that you have going on now.
Well, currently we've got 8 active subdivisions. At one time we had 11, and those have been built out. And there was a time for many, many years where I would sell and develop over 300 lots a year in the Hamilton County area. Now, of course, that changed with the recession.
Right.
And our projects are scaled down a little bit. They're still moving along. But mm-hmm. there was a time where I would build in each neighborhood about 100 lots a year. And now we're down to about 30 lots a year, which is a reflection of the new conservative approach and to what the market will absorb.
Right. But one of the things we were talking about is the appetite for home ownership, and you know, that it might be shifting a little bit with millennials. Give me some perspective on that.
Well,
what you guys
that.
Are doing to yep. adjust to that.
Well, we've seen that, and we've seen as you know, when the Great Recession came, the first thing people did was they quit buying houses, and then slowly as people came back into the housing market, there were many of them that had a poor experience someplace else, What we found is that there are 1,000 reasons why people can't buy now, but mm-hmm. they still want to be in a home. They still want to have a small yard. They want to have the luxury of home ownership. And so we found a lot of the millennials who are they're not committing to purchase the home, but they'd like to live in one. So we've begun to rent them to them. We've been very fortunate and been able to combine that effort with some private equity firms and make it a going business.
So so that's something where you're really so as someone comes into one of your projects or subdivisions, you really have the option to either buy or, you know, be able to rent.
That's true.
That's fantastic. True.
And you know, it's worked out good for us because it's allowed us to keep the developments going, to satisfy our commitments to the banks, to mm-hmm. to take down a certain number of lots and to keep the development loans rolling along. And it's supplied a demand in the market. You know, we've got a lot of new big businesses in Chattanooga. We've got Volkswagen, we've got Alstrom, we've got lots of startup companies, and they bring employees from outside our area. And many of those areas have experienced very steep downturns and have left people with perhaps a bad taste in their mouth with the housing market, possibly some credit that's been scarred because of the housing downturn, and it's given them the option to rent and still stay in a nice home.
That's an great way to be flexible in the market, but also address the needs of your customer base.
We feel like it's really a no-lose scenario. When people come back into the housing market and intend to buy, we're going to have lots of nice houses right there that we're going to put on the market and sell to them.
Mm-hmm. Do you typically kind of enter in with those rentals for a year or 2 years or multi-year situations?
You know, a lot of our clients, and we have truly morphed our company into a property management firm, you know, because of this. A lot of our lease clients are here for 3 years, mm-hmm. and they'll sign a 3-year lease. They may be executives with Volkswagen, they may be engineers with Volkswagen or Komatsu or one of the local big firms.
Right, and that's really interesting how that they're willing to commit for a longer time and mm-hmm. be very comfortable here.
Yep.
And tell me a little bit about working with your father over the years, and you know, maybe some of the kind of tenets of your business that started with him that you're continuing?
Yeah, well, my father was a taskmaster. He was a civil engineer, very good civil engineer, loved the land development business. And he made me work from the time I was about, I started when I was about 12 or 13, cutting line on a survey crew with a chainsaw and a machete. And he worked me until the day he died. He worked me like a dog, you know. And he'd always tell people, you know, look, I'm going to point Jay in the right direction and get him to build me a road. And he did. And I'm very fortunate to have had his have somebody like him teach me this business mm-hmm. and how to stay in it.
Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of heavy equipment, but mm-hmm. you've got to have a favorite. What's your favorite big machine to
drive? My favorite big machine to run is just a big bulldozer. There is nothing like having a big bulldozer. You know, other people would like to run a track hoe or an excavator or maybe a backhoe, but for me, it's always been the bulldozer. Yeah. Ever since I was little, I wanted to run a big bulldozer. And there's nothing like putting on a set of headphones and putting some nice music on and having a big, huge bulldozer underneath you.
Well, that's an experience I've never had, so yeah. Maybe I'll have to come by your one of your developments one day. And
but it's nothing better to relieve stress.
You know, sit in the passenger seat and watch you knock some stuff down.
Yeah.
That's great. Thank you, Jay. Really insightful snapshot of your business. Tim, good morning.
Morning.
Tell me a little bit about Chattanooga Whiskey and Tennessee Stillhouse.
So the relationship, I'll start between the two. I'll start there. Tennessee Stillhouse is a brand developer and owner and an experience. So Tennessee Stillhouse is the corporate entity that produces brands such as our flagship Chattanooga Whiskey, and then we also have a recent brand that we just launched called Dr. Thatcher's Cocktail Syrups.
Okay, and tell me a little bit about cocktail syrups. That sounds interesting.
Well, one of the reasons that craft whiskey brands are growing so rapidly over the last 5+ years has a lot to do with what's happening at the bars. So at the bars, craft cocktails are on the rise.
Right.
And so a lot of guys, I'll stick my neck out there and say, like me, that aren't very good at producing a true old-fashioned or a true Manhattan or a true Sazerac.
Right.
We need some help. And okay. So you can actually develop syrups that you can really replicate those cocktails without having to learn how to muddle properly or stir properly or have, 17 different ingredients, right. And be essentially a chef, behind the bar. And so Dr. Thatcher's is a super quality cocktail syrup that allows you to produce a Sazerac or a Manhattan at home with literally just 2 ounces of whiskey and 3/4 of an ounce of the syrup.
Sounds exactly what I need. Thank
yes,
you.
It is, actually.
Tell us about the history of your firm. You started it in 2011.
That's correct, yep.
Give us a quick snapshot, because it's a fascinating story.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting one. It was it's been an exciting ride and a very stressful ride at the same time. Mm-hmm. Didn't realize that, roller coasters could, be so erratic in such a short period of time, but they can in the business world. So Chattanooga Whiskey we were founded under the name Chattanooga Whiskey, October 2011, and we literally started on social media. We started on Facebook, and it was because we ran across the history of whiskey in Chattanooga. The history of whiskey in Chattanooga is a unique one in that Chattanooga is one of the larger distilling towns in North America. And stumbling across this history, it was a buddy of mine and I that said, we got to do something here. We got to bring this back. And we were, craft beer drinkers, and the craft beer boom had been going on for 20+ years. Chattanooga actually was one of the leaders for Tennessee, and that Big River actually was one of the first craft that had to change some laws in order to be able to brew their own beer here. So it was astonishing that 20+ years of craft brewing was happening in Tennessee, which is synonymous with whiskey worldwide, and yet there wasn't a distillery in Chattanooga since 1915. Mm-hmm. So my first thought was, well, that's impossible. Check all the URLs. Go to GoDaddy.com and type anything Chattanooga, anything Lookout Mountain, you know, anything Scenic City, and put whiskey or bourbon or something on it. And there was nothing. Wow. No one had done anything. All right, search all the social media platforms. Nothing. Okay, search Trademarkia. Nothing. So we were like, all right, well, let's just launch a Facebook page. so we launched Chattanooga Whiskey Facebook, which we felt like was the name that would kind of encompass everything.
Right.
And the next morning, we had several hundred people following us and asking us where they could get it. And then the next week, we had several thousand people following us and asking where the, and then we had the media calling us. We didn't have a plan. We didn't know what this product was going to be. So that began the journey. And then we had to source whiskey because it was illegal to distill. We had to find out what the laws were. It's a really it's a long story, but that was the beginning.
And talk about the campaign a little bit to really get the ability to distill your own.
Right. So the campaign was called the Vote Whiskey Campaign. Mm-hmm. And the reason we came up with the Vote Whiskey Campaign is because the original thought was, if we can find a super premium whiskey, which is not easy to find, that's been aging, right, and put it in a bottle, then it'll be a campaign in a bottle. Because what'll happen is we will create this package that everybody will gravitate to from a historical standpoint, and it will be it'll be tastefully done. And the legislators will go, well, all of the bars are serving it, all of the retailers are selling it, our local citizens are drinking it. We should just let them make it here because we're not benefiting from any of the real tax revenue or the jobs.
Right.
Which in 2011, Jay can testify to this, but jobs and job bills were extremely important coming out of the recession still. So it didn't work. I mean, it worked from a consumer standpoint, and we were selling the product, but it didn't work from a legislation standpoint. They weren't convinced. They probably felt more like we were just trying to capitalize off the name of Chattanooga, and what we were just going to continue to do that, and we had no real desire to actually try and build a distillery. That's when we started the Vote Whiskey Campaign, and that was after we sourced 1,200 barrels of aged whiskey, which we had to raise a lot of capital for. So that would have been, we secured 1,200 barrels in September, and we pretty much immediately launched the Vote Whiskey Campaign after we had lobbied a few, it wasn't a city deal. It was a county and state deal. We had lobbied a few commissioners, and we weren't getting very far. So, and then we went to the state attorney general, and the state attorney general came back, and his response was not as favorable as we had hoped. And that's when we decided that the Vote Whiskey Campaign was going to put the power into the people's hands.
And so fast forward. That happened.
It did happen.
They voted, and it you have the ability to distill now.
We do. We are the first and only legal distillery in Chattanooga since 1915. And the Vote Whiskey Campaign worked. It raised awareness. All of our local residents, and actually lots of people from out of town that had passion for our story, were emailing and calling our local commissioners, and that led to a November vote. We had, from what I hear, the largest turnout in Hamilton County Courthouse history. There were several hundred people that showed up, all in favor but one, actually. we thanked him.
That's
for,
okay. You know,
we
that,
we,
that,
we thanked him for his
that's
opposition.
That's what America's all about, right?
We literally thanked him for his opposition. Thank you for being here. But so that was successful. We had seven yeses. Two of the commissioners abstained from voting. Going into it, we actually had five yeses, two maybes, two noes. We flipped one entirely, and I think it was because of the people and the turnout. It just goes to show you, what the power of the people together really can accomplish. So,
and what was the tipping point for you in the process where you kind of felt like, okay, this is really going to work?
Never had
any doubt. Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't even say that. It was. So one thing that Jay and I do have in common is we both have worked and love our fathers. I worked for my dad. I was actually working for my dad at the time. I'd been working for him for 8 years. I had done everything from purchasing, cost accounting, to you know, to estimating to sales. I was in a sales and business development role actually with him at the time, and my father was in, you know, had established our family in Chattanooga in ministry for 16 years. So, you know, I built a house downtown 10 years ago. I had lived in this community, but I had been commuting to a different community north Georgia, and I was, you know, had a desire to, you know, to really be a part, a deeper part of the community from a business standpoint and a community standpoint. And so, it was just a, you know, it was just always kind of a felt good to do it. And let's just, and, you know, take the risk. And, my wife and I had taken a risk to build a house and into a community that didn't have anything in it. And so, the whole time, it just, you know, I kind of felt like I was along for the ride. Mm-hmm. And I just never took a moment to back up and assess and either go, what am I doing? Or, you know, or this is, you know, this feels right. I will say if there's any one, an easier, more direct answer to that, I'm kind of an idea guy. I like to think about all the different things that, you know, you can do from an entrepreneurial standpoint. And most of the times I had ideas, they were later at night, and then I would wake up in the morning and I would say, man, that was a terrible idea. and I did that 99% of the time. And this was actually the one time I woke up the next morning and I was just like, let's do this. This feels good. This feels like the right thing. It feels like it needs to happen. It feels like Chattanooga really needs it. So,
and it's just an incredible story of, as you say, the people, the legislature, your idea, all coming together. It's really dynamic. Talk about your growth plans for the next few years, where you see things going next.
Well, things haven't always panned out like I thought they would. So we definitely have experienced a lot of, a lot of the realities of starting your own business, both from a partnership standpoint, a capital standpoint, a market standpoint. We have had to adjust along the way. One of the things that we were pursuing was actually rapidly building a large scale production facility, in downtown, that was going to be, you know, close to 60,000 square feet. We were going to be one of the largest craft distillers, in the country. Mm-hmm. Some internal, you know, crisis kind of happened and we decided to forego that, and actually it got to the point where we were now close to 2 years past changing the law, and we still didn't have a distillery. Mm. Meanwhile, Tennessee was going from, you know, 4 distilleries to 25 distilleries. So market timing was critical along with that. And so it played a large part in our decision to build a micro distillery. And the micro distillery was going to allow us to get our feet planted, to begin generating some additional capital that we weren't generating. We were still selling. We've been selling in Tennessee, Georgia, South Carolina, and we've been selling from the 1,200 barrels that we have. We're down to 790. We're very transparent, by the way, about everything. Yeah. So, you know, another thing it allowed us to do was figure out, you know, basically what we're going to make.
Right.
We knew we wanted to be a bourbon company. But, you know, honestly, my business partner and I had never distilled a drop of whiskey before. And so it's, you know, we knew what we liked, but what we were going to make. And so, you know, what that has also allowed us to do, the micro distillery, was actually find a distiller that could really take us to whatever level we wanted to grow the company to. Mm-hmm. So we hired, and it was, you know, really just, it was fate, but we hired the head of research and development and a head brewer from Sam Adams, Boston Beer Company. He has developed over 100 products for Sam Adams, both by himself and in conjunction with some other brewers. I think over himself personally, over 50 products. Head brewers can really make great head distillers. And Grant, actually, Grant McCracken is his name. Grant studied distilling and had a passion for it and wanted to move to the South. He's got a wife and a little baby, wanted to move to the South, wanted to get in with a company on the ground floor, wanted a little bit of equity, which I was able to provide. And it just, you know, now he built a house actually in my neighborhood, which this thing better work out because we're neighbors now. But no, so that has really helped us figure out who we are, the micro distillery. It's a 100-gallon batch system. So if we do something creative and it doesn't work out, we can throw it out and it won't, you know, break the bank.
Right.
And so so that has been a great experience. It's across from the Chattanooga Choo Choo. But the next step is to build a larger production facility. Larger production facility is going to produce 6 to 7 barrels a day compared to the micro distillery, which produces 1 barrel a week. What we want to be is, I have held off from going beyond Tennessee, Georgia, South Carolina distribution. There's two ways of going about this. You can really, it's, you know, this is a 3-tier system, meaning you have to rely on distribution. It's the sure. legal middleman.
Yep.
Distributors reach out to you across the country if you have a good product. And fortunately we do. So we get distributors pulling us in 17, you know, well, 50 different directions because there's 50 states. And so I've held off now for 2 years on growing distribution outside Tennessee, Georgia, South Carolina, because I believe in hand selling. I believe in having a salesman that works directly for you. And so even though we're going to grow our production capacity from 1 barrel a week to 6 barrels a day, believe it or not, that is still craft. That'll allow us to grow into, you know, comfortably 10, 15 more states. But I'm going to do it one state at a time, and I'm going to grow outside of starting from the core being Tennessee, Georgia, South Carolina, and grow from the southeast out.
Gotcha. And now once you start distilling, there's obviously an aging process with bourbon, and then there's the secret recipe. So sounds like you guys have the recipe pretty much worked out.
The micro distillery is a craft.
Starting the aging.
Yeah. So we've put away 50 barrels so far. Which that math might not work out if you think about 1 barrel a week, because we've been open only since March 24th, except we're doing 2-size barrels, 25-gallon barrels and 53-gallon barrels. 25s are going to age a little faster. We have done over 30 unique recipes, everything from malted bourbons to traditional bourbons to Scottish bourbons that use peated malt to single malts to wheated bourbons. And we are literally, and everything that I've tried so far that Grant has produced has been absolutely amazing. Our theory is what's great going into the barrel is even better coming out of the barrel.
Right.
So our oldest product right now is 5 months old. So there's still a lot to learn, a whole lot to learn, but we are dialing in who we want to be when we grow up.
That's really, really fascinating to hear you talk about just literally bringing it from the beginning. As you kind of form your company, what are some of the cultural cornerstones that you really want to have as front and center for Chattanooga whiskey?
That's a great question. I believe in having fun. I believe, you know, we are a young group. You could say by design, but also like Jay said, the way that Chattanooga is growing right now, the entrepreneurial community and the young community that's growing rapidly in this town, and so there's a lot of opportunity here right now. Mm-hmm. Culturally, it's growing and shifting. For us, whiskey companies historically are, you know, they're all about their history. And they take themselves very seriously.
Right.
And there's not this mid-20s to mid-30s kind of cultural demographic that's driving that ship. And that's the difference, I think, between us and every other whiskey or bourbon company in the country.
So really tap into that. To that next generation.
If you look at our advertising, we advertise in a magazine called Native, which is the trendy magazine, kind of the indie magazine for Nashville. Mm-hmm. Super high quality magazine. It's on almost, you know, every any storefront you walk into. That's, you know, whether it be like a cool shoe company or whatever, they've got Native sitting, you know, on their coffee tables. If you look at our advertisement, you know, it is, it is about the quality of the product. So it is about the product. But, you know, it's really a reflection of who we are. You know, we're a bunch of, you know, young, energetic adults that love to produce whiskey and love to talk about it and love to hang out with our friends and enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And we've got lots of interest. We're in an outdoors community, so we like to tap into the outdoors part of our community. Mm-hmm. And so we like to have a lot of fun with our language, and we try to keep it as clean and respectful as we possibly can. But, you know, we like to be creative. I like to say one of the things that, and maybe this will kind of help more directly answer, but most spirits companies believe, and the market believes, that 80% of the success is driven by marketing, 20% of the success is driven by product quality. Mm-hmm. I believe we are 50-50. Mm-hmm. I will always preach that we are 50-50, except one of the interesting things about us being 50-50 is now we're doing everything internally, and 90%+ of, and I'm throwing a statistic out there, but is in our industry, they outsource all their marketing. So there's no real connection to the brand.
Right.
We are a marketing. We started as a marketing company. Yeah. We were a marketing company before we were a production company.
Right, yeah.
And so we do all of our marketing. 100% of our marketing is internal.
Yeah. Jay, I'd love to kind of bring you back in too. Cultural cornerstones of your firm, things that you really kind of stake out as it relates to dealing with your clients, or
we believe in listening to our clients and taking what they have to tell us and putting it into our future product.
Mm-hmm.
That's something a lot of people in the home building business forget, and it's something my father taught me early on, is that I'm not building this house or these houses for myself. I'm building them for a clientele that has probably different wants and needs than what I've got.
Mm-hmm.
And so we really place a value on listening to what our customers have to tell us. In fact, we have a questionnaire at every closing that they mail directly to me. Nobody else sees it, and they get to evaluate our sales process, our subcontractors, the people who work for me personally, and they get to evaluate just the whole experience.
Mm-hmm.
And they seal it up at the closing, and they lick the envelope and close it, and it comes directly to my office. And so I get to sort of get some personal feedback from every client. And I think that's the real heart of our business, is just listening to what people tell us.
That's true for any business, really. Mm-hmm. Both of you, whether you're building a new community or building a new brand, have to effectively get the word out. You can call that advertising, you can call it marketing, you can whatever. Jay, talk a little bit about how you do that with a new community how you're getting the word out about your company.
We still believe in the newspaper. We feel like that on Sundays, a young couple are probably going to get the newspaper and open it up, even though a lot of people are telling us the newspapers are dead and they're not mm-hmm. they're not looking at it. I still see a lot of people with a newspaper and want to touch and feel that paper and look at it. So we believe in the newspaper. We believe in the printed advertising of these the little new home magazine type thing. I do some radio. I do some TV advertising, and I do sort of a little bit of a shotgun approach to advertising. And it's hard to get a feel for what works and what doesn't.
Right.
It's sort of like a seance. I'm sure Tim has experienced this. You know, you get all kinds of ideas thrown at you, especially in their business where marketing is very, very important. I will tell you something funny about our business that ties our businesses together. In my early years, we've developed a huge neighborhood in Hamilton County on a large piece of land, and we would find steals occasionally. So Hamilton County has had a long history with making whiskey, whether legal or illegal.
Do you keep any?
We didn't keep any. Sad to say, we didn't keep any.
Well, you know who to call now if you run across another one.
Yeah, and you know what? We will call you, because it was quite funny. The first one we found, I didn't know what it was. I sat down when I was about 20 years old to have a drink and take a little break from surveying this large piece of property. And a guy I was working with had been with us for a long time. He was from Marion County, and he knew a lot about steels. And he said, "Well, that's an old steel there, Jay. It was a couple of barrels, and you could see where they had dug a pit into the side of the earth."
Huh.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's so really cool.
Hamilton County's had a long history with whiskey.
Yeah.
So, Tim, back to marketing, you know, you said social media has obviously been kind of critical. Other thoughts about how you're getting the word out?
Yeah, well, you know, we have to really think about from our industry you know, you look at brands like Jack Daniel's, you know, that have been around the longest, and they captured a demographic that is, you know, once somebody's been, I think it's somewhere between 5 and 7 years been drinking a certain brand, they're much less likely to ever, you know, veer away from that product. So though locally, you know, we're 80 miles from Jack Daniel's, we have certainly flipped a few of their customers, which, you know, feels good. That's not who we're targeting. So we have to think about who we're targeting. That the next brand would have been somebody like Maker's Mark, right? Maker's Mark then came around, and really, if you, you know, bourbon drinkers between, you know, I'd say late 30s and maybe early 50s now are real. There's a lot of, you know, dedicated, committed Maker's Mark, enthusiasts.
Right.
So, you know, today, where does that really leave us? Well, we're going to try and capture the 24 to, I call it 24 to 39.
Okay.
You know, so social media is really important for the 24 to 39 demographic. We do have an experience in downtown Chattanooga, so billboards, and our billboards have been awesome, by the way. I mean, we have little comment cards that ask people where they, you know, found out about us.
Mm-hmm.
And so TripAdvisor has been a good one. Just drive-by traffic's been a great one. Billboards have been huge. Social media has been huge. Word of mouth, obviously, is still king, I believe.
Okay.
So, you know, but yes, a lot of trial and error when it comes to marketing. We've definitely, we've upped our marketing budget quite a bit. You know, I believe that full page ads, if you're going to do an ad in a magazine, full page ad is the only way to go. I just don't, you know, I've done half page, I've done quarter page, and I just don't think that it has the impact. I think minimum 3 or 4 months, you know, in a magazine is the way to go. Doing a 1 month or, you know, one mag ad, especially if it's less than full page, I think you might as well just throw your money away.
So that repetition is really important. I guess you probably find that in the newspaper side.
I couldn't agree more. I think you have to be patient with advertising. You have to give it a chance to work.
Yeah.
And you have to be there. If you're not advertising, you don't exist.
Right.
You know, a lot of people, you know, forget that. So it's a hard, it's one of the hardest things to realize that you do have to advertise.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One other thing that is always kind of interesting is, to ask folks how technology is really changing your business a little bit. Jay, you know, we've been building homes for a long time. But,
technology has changed tremendously.
But how are you kind of taking advantage of technology?
We have a great website, and a lot of people will go there and spend a large amount of time on our website. In fact, more than most websites, because there's a lot of information there, and they'll study the floor plans, they'll study the communities, they'll go to the links that we have. They'll study the school systems. You'd just be amazed at how much information people will now want to get, because they'll be sitting at their home in front of their computer, and they're going to have a lot of time to study the market and whatnot. We have actually sold some houses to people who I've never met, who would buy a house based upon what they got off the web. And,
wow.
And people can't believe that, and it's not common. But it just tells you how powerful that medium can be, and it's an amazing thing. So technology has changed our business tremendously. You know, I used to have to fax things to people. You know, they'd want me to fax them a floor plan or fax them a quote, and now everything's electronic. You send it instantly. Realtors have gone from taking pictures with a 35-millimeter camera or something cheap like that to digital.
Right.
You know, the MLS used to be printed on as a book. I don't know if everybody knows what the MLS system is, but we used to get
Isn't
a book.
Isn't it incredible to think about that?
And then all of a sudden the book went away.
Right.
It was like, oh my gosh, you know, now it's on a computer. We've got supervisors in the field who walk around with tablets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've got a maintenance crew that has a tablet so that if there's a need in one of the houses, they can input that into a program that will give us a list of what needs to be done. So technology has changed everything.
That's remarkable. We've been distilling bourbon for a long time,
yeah,
too.
That's right.
You know, are there specific technology applications that you guys are using other than the social media?
Sure. Yeah, right. I mean, from a social media standpoint, I mean, Instagram, right? Capturing, I mean, photography online, capturing what you're doing has been it's the best. But from a production standpoint, yeah, stills have come a long way. People still use, you know, shiners in particular, still use pot stills, gooseneck pot stills. Actually, you know, they're still used in Scotland. There's still quite a few actually larger productions. If you go to Woodford Reserve, they have Scottish pot stills that are gooseneck pot stills. But there's a lot more beyond the still. But just from a still standpoint, reflux systems are really big. It's a hybrid. It's a pot still with a column on it. Really allows you to control the amount of water that runs through the system or vapor. Control the amount of vapor. You can based on levers and perforated plates that are in the column, we can control the amount of vapor, and we can control what proof the still, what proof the spirit comes off the still at. So, it's still copper and stainless, and, there's still a batch system. It's a pot with a column on it, but these plates and all the copper lines that are running to them and the different levers that you have, you can control. The different pressures and whatnot. It definitely helps the efficiency. And then you take it to the fermenting side, jacketed fermenters that allow you to control the temperature of the fermentation, is certainly really helpful when it comes to how your yeast thrives when it's eating those sugars up and creating CO2 and alcohol and organic acids. And
there's definitely a lot of chemistry to your business.
A lot. Most of which I do not know about. I know enough to be dangerous, but I may still blow myself up if I'm doing it in my backyard, which I don't.
That's great.
But anyways, there's technology from a bottling standpoint. I mean, bottling is its own business. We do all of our own bottling right now, but hopefully we always will. But the efficiency of bottling and the accuracy of the proof, you have to be, from a federal regulation standpoint, within 0.02% of what it says on the bottle. So if it's 90 proof, it better be 90 proof.
Right.
So there's a lot of chemistry when it comes to dialing in your proof and making sure that it's accurate.
Interesting. So, yeah. One thing that I ask all of our guests on Founders Club is, what's the best business advice you've ever received? Jay, thoughts on that?
I've received a lot of advice. One of the best things my father taught me was just to be patient. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things that come across your desk that you should just wait a little while and let time take its course. Not to mean you ignore it, but to mean you let if a problem comes across my desk, maybe a superintendent has a problem, a lot of things will solve themselves just through the natural process of carrying on business in an orderly manner that you may not want to, that may occupy your time otherwise if you don't give it just a little bit of time.
Right.
And so that was a very important piece of advice for me to learn, because when I was younger, I wanted to solve everything right then. But then I found that there were a lot of things that would solve themselves if I gave it a little bit of time.
What a great way to rely more on your team too than perhaps, going in and fixing everything yourself.
Oh, yeah. By micromanaging, you create so many problems. Mm-hmm. My father told me, if you micromanage the people in the field, they will quit making decisions. And they will call you at every opportunity to have you make the decision for them. Then why have the field crew? Right. Why have these people? So I give people responsibility and expect them to carry on with that responsibility. And that's a very important thing to do.
Yeah, very empowering for your folks.
Sure it is.
Yeah, absolutely. Best business advice, Tim.
I'm right with Jay. I mean, patience, is key. I feel like, I mean, there's been, I've surrounded myself, fortunately, I've had the opportunity to surround myself. And I think a lot of that, with great people. And I think a lot of that comes with, the family that I grew up in, the way that my parents raised me. I think most of it has to do with the way my parents raised me. But the community of Chattanooga and what it's provided me. And so I've had a lot of excellent advisors and mentors that come from all different walks of life and have different business backgrounds, and do not be afraid to seek advice from them. I'm still trying to figure out, you know, what a CEO is. You know, don't try and be everything. Mm-hmm. Rely on your team members. Trust. Trust is the is every much. Is, I mean, it's equally as important as patience. You know, you have to trust the people that you're surrounding yourself with. So it's just, you know, honestly, all these things take time. They take a lot of time, and that's the hardest part.
Great advice from both of you. Thank you. One thing that we, you guys both spoke so passionately about Chattanooga. What are some of the charities or institutions that you're involved in, you know, and particularly passionate about?
Well, I tell you something that I'm passionate about is this soccer in Chattanooga. You know, I mean, it's not a charity, but it certainly represents our city.
Yeah, absolutely.
And how progressive and how forward-thinking we are, that we can fill our stadium. You know, some friends of mine I went to school with started soccer, or professional soccer in Chattanooga, and I told them early on, I said, you know what, you're going to fill that stadium quicker, and you're going to fill it fuller than our local football team. And I love our local football team. I went to UTC, and I love the Mocs. But it's a statement about where we're going as a city, that uh-huh. soccer is our new sport here.
That's great. Do you go to a lot of games?
Yeah, I do. I go to a lot of games. I was an early sponsor, and I love it. I think it represents our city there. But there's, you know, our city is you know, we have the luxury in our city of having lots of organizations that are charitable. We've had Coca-Cola here was founded in Chattanooga, and so we've had a lot of Coca-Cola money that has a lot of great, huge foundations, and so Chattanooga has a tradition of that. Personally, I like to give to certain charities and do it in a quiet manner. Mm-hmm. But we're very, very fortunate in Chattanooga to have those organizations.
That's great. Tim?
Yeah, Chattanooga is actually, I think, you know, I've heard from many people, you know, on the ministry side and the nonprofit side, with my father being one of them for many, many, many years, is regarded as one of the more charitable cities, you know, per capita in the country. And there are a ton yeah. of organizations. Obviously, you know, the Chattanooga Community Foundation does a great job. And with the recent, you know, tragedy that happened with the five servicemen, I think, you know, you had the Heroes Fund that was set up that mm-hmm. Peyton Manning is involved in. And so, you know, like Jay, I don't like to wear on my sleeve, you know, where we spend, you know, where we donate, but we do get lots of requests for, right. for silent auction items and donations, and I try to appease, you know, every single one of them if I can. So
great. This has been really fantastic. I appreciate both of you spending so much time telling us about your businesses, about your vision for what's coming up next. Jay, how can folks learn more about your company?
It's very easy. They can go to mynewbellhome.com.
Mynewbellhome.com.
That's right.
Sounds like great. Yep. And Tim, what about you?
ChattanoogaWhiskey.com.
Okay. Fantastic. Well, visit the website. Everyone needs to buy a new home and buy a bottle of whiskey.
So, buy a new home and celebrate. A bottle of whiskey.
I was just thinking, if you buy a new home, I'll give you a bottle of whiskey. He'll have a new whiskey drinker, and I'll have a homeowner.
There you go. Sounds great. Well, thank you both. Join us again next week for another Founders Club broadcast, sponsored by Atlantic Capital Bank and FSG Bank, and powered by Business Radio X.